You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks for being a part of the Paranormal Portal family. It's been an incredible journey, and you guys have been nothing short of amazing, and we are absolutely thrilled to see this continue to grow and develop. If you have a story of your very own that you'd like to bring to the table and potentially be a guest on the show, reach out to us via email at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Got a great show lined up for you guys today. Our guest today is an incredibly compelling person who's had a really amazing journey. His name is Mike Beaver. He has been several things in his life, and I'm just going to name a few of them here. But he has been an IT professional. He has been in the motion picture industry doing stunts, and he's done some incredible stunts, one of which was a martial arts sidekick off a two-story racquetball court, and which was a death scene. And he's also had an amazing lifetime of paranormal encounters. So we're going to discuss that today. So, Mike, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here. You've had a whole laundry list of things going on in your experience, but you said that what you've dealt with the most is spiritual attachments.
Well, thank you for inviting me to your show. I appreciate you're allowing me to be on your show. And as far as attaching spirits goes, it's not so much that I've had a huge opportunity to deal with them with other people. I've had five or six opportunities to work with people as a hypnotherapist doing attachment, spirit attachment removals, and only one of those has actually worked. The rest did not work. Uh-huh. But I've had two of my own attaching spirits since I was about 16, and I got those through smoking pot. I stayed high morning, noon, and night on marijuana for 18 years from the age of 16 to the age of 34. I broke the habit, and that's what how I got my attaching spirits. So that's my intro to that area. But how much you want me to tell you about the other areas of my life is up to you. So,
well, the floor is yours, sir. I'm really excited to hear what you've experienced and what you have to share. So, by all means, take it away.
In the IT world, I'll just give you two very quick things that I've done. I worked with another fellow, and together we stopped a congressional investigation, just the two of us. Wow. That's one thing I did. Another thing I did was I was a part of Petraeus's four-star briefing I worked in the war room in Afghanistan in Kabul, and we were part of his daily briefing with a bunch of generals in the room and 30 to 50 drone feeds going through Raytheon. As far as hypnotherapy goes, I worked with one abductee who was used as a breeder for the Greys. Her story alone could consume this whole show and more.
Wow.
As I mentioned before, I assisted one client removing a dark spirit attachment he had. What he did was he liked to manifest things in the world. So he would go about looking for things that would give him power to manifest changes in reality. Mm. And so in that journey, he found a book and he read this book. And he never would tell me the name of the book, but he said that every single person who ever read that book committed suicide. And he got in a very negative state of mind as a result of reading this book, and he couldn't get out of it. So he saw my hypnotherapy card tacked to a bulletin board in some town I was living in, probably Houston. Mm-hmm. And he got a hold of me and said, I just read Shakuntala Modi's book, Remarkable Healings, and she does attachment spirit removals. I want you to read that book and then use her technique on me. And so I did. I read like about a quarter of her book, and I wasn't that far through with it where I felt confident to use her techniques. But he said, I can't wait. Let's mm-hmm. have a session. And so we had a session, and nothing of note happened on the first session other than it was kind of dark in the room in my apartment. I kept it dark at that time because I felt like that would help the hypnosis session, even though it's really totally unnecessary. Mm-hmm. But that was my belief at the time. So I had it fairly dark when he walked in the room. He sat down. We had a session. At the end of the session, after bringing him out, one thing he told me was, the left side of his face was doing all kinds of contortions, but I couldn't see that because I was sitting on his right side. And so we didn't have much success in the first session. Mm-hmm. He came back a second. He paid for the first session, even though we didn't really have much success. And he came back a second session. And during the second session, he saw in his mind's eye a Venus flytrap. Mm-hmm. And then he also saw a blob, and this blob was this thing that was moving. It was morphing around. That was his attaching spirit, and he was just seeing the blob by itself. And then along came this Venus flytrap and ate the blob, and then disappeared. And his attaching spirit was gone permanently. Wow. And he kept in touch with me afterwards, and he started using her techniques with other people and had a lot of success with it. And he said that at some point within a week or two of our session, he started laughing, and he couldn't stop laughing for like a week or two. And it was, a very positive thing. And, he never had a problem with it after that. And so we kept in touch for a short period, and he was successful in using her technique with other people. Hypnosis is probably the easiest profession on earth to learn, and it's probably the safest technique to use with people ever created. Mm. And the only problem with it is Christians look at it like the devil's work, and therefore it's kind of looked down upon by a section of our population here. So mm-hmm. anyway, I'm a fast forward here. I was a stuntman for over a decade. Chuck Norris's best friend was my instructor, and he trained my instructor privately for 6.5 years, and my instructor trained me privately for 1.5 years and publicly for 2 years. So I used my talents as a martial artist, and I guess I started out as an action photographer. I hooked up with the Houston Summons Association, and basically I took their photographs for their portfolios and did martial arts and stunts, other kinds of stunts in the motion picture industry in Houston. So that it didn't work out for me because I just didn't really put as much effort into that profession as I should have.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, go ahead. You have a question?
No. I find that very interesting.
Okay. So as far as ufology goes, I've hung out with and interacted with and on a very amateur basis with people such as Daryl Sims, the alien hunter out of Houston with Houston UFO Network. Peter Davenport of Newfork, I used to go to his meetings. I went to HUFON meetings for a year. I went to Newfork meetings for a year or two. I also attended MUFON with Walt Andrus, who used to run, would be the international head of MUFON in Austin, Texas. I don't know if he was the head of MUFON at the time I knew him, though. That might have been after he was the head. John Schuessler, the international head of MUFON after Walt, investigated my alien encounters, my early alien encounters, not the later ones, back in the day. I don't know if you're familiar with the Cash Landrum case, but it was within 2 or 3 years of that going public that he investigated my case, my first close encounter, which was on NASA base before the first space shuttle launch. That was my second close encounter. My first one was 6 months earlier than that. At my mother's house on Clay and Gessner in Northwest Houston. So I've had lots of alien encounters. We could do a whole show just on aliens.
Sure.
But as far as attaching spirits go, on my website, have you had a chance to look at my website at all?
No, I had not. I am sorry.
Okay,
about
so
that.
You might want to go there now while we're talking.
Sure. Because
it might help us out. Profoundstates.com. That's my website.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there now?
Yep, I am.
Top right, below the tabs, the very first link on the top right-hand corner is my book. If you want to click on that, that's a good place for us to start our conversation. So if you want to read the title of my book, that would be a good thing.
Instruments of Control, How Attaching Spirits Cause War, Terrorism, Crime, Racism, Murder, Insanity, Mental Illness, Molestation, marital discord, suicide, and many other illnesses, and are leading humanity to its fourth impending fall.
So, Instruments of Control, How Attaching Spirits Cause All Those Things You Mentioned. That's the title of my book. And it is really the topic of any discussion that I am allowed to decide what that topic is. Like I said before, I got my own attaching spirits from smoking pot. So I was living with my wife up in Oregon, in Portland, Oregon, and I ran into this one lady, and she thought she had some healing talent. She did not, but for whatever reason, went from Portland down to her ranch with her husband, and we walked into their double wide mobile home, and I introduced myself, my wife, and she pointed her hand at me with her finger out pointing, and she said, "You're healed." And I was like, in my mind I was thinking, "You're an idiot," and and you know, I knew that she didn't have that kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't met the person with that kind of power yet.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just kind of didn't say anything to her, and we went about our day and interacted with her and her husband. And then when the day was over, my wife and I left and went back to our apartment in Portland. And she called me, you know, within 1 to 6 weeks after that encounter at her place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gone to her place for my attaching spirits to get rid of them. And she said, "I called up my psychic friend and asked her about your problem. And she said, you got it from smoking. But I didn't see you smoking. Do you smoke?"
Mm-hmm.
And her friend never told her smoking what.
Oh.
And so she assumed it was cigarettes. But she hadn't seen me smoke any cigarettes, so she's like, "Do you smoke?" And I said, "Well, no, actually, I don't smoke. I did smoke pot for 18 years. I was cured of that addiction," and that's another story altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment forward, from that cure, I stopped smoking, but I stayed high morning, noon, and night for 18 years from the age of 16 to the age of 34. That's, I told her that, and she goes, well, my psychic friend said that you got your attaching spirits from smoking. So that's how I know how I got my attaching spirits.
Mm, okay.
So there are a number of authorities who talk about attaching spirits, who either deal with them on some level. Usually they know them from a secondhand perspective, like as a therapist, and that's where you hear about this from. But are you familiar with, you know who Michael Crichton is, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with his attaching spirits?
No, I'm not at all.
Okay. So on my website, the tab says The Entity by Michael Crichton. So this is his autobiography. It was published, as far as I know, it was before he died. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, so he was in my area one day, and I wanted to ask him about his attaching spirits. So his case is probably the most famous case ever, if with the possible exception of The Exorcist, which is a very fictionalized version of a true story.
Right.
So I won't go into that, but on his case, there is a very long excerpt from his book on the page you just reached.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to ask his widow for permission to have this on my website, and she never would respond to me. So one day maybe she'll tell me to take it down. But this is in the last chapter of his book called Travels. The chapter is called The Entity, and it probably should be called The Entities, plural, because he didn't have one entity, he had four.
Mm.
Okay, and so this excerpt, or these excerpts, which is in the book, I think it's about 3 to 5 pages. So he goes to a hypnotherapist, and the hypnotherapist puts another lady who's in the session with him, or helps her put herself in a trance. It's all self-induced, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on a couch across the room, and he's on a massage table or something. And then after she's in trance, the hypnotherapist puts Michael in trance. And then he asks Michael, do you see anything? And Michael goes, he lies to the therapist. He says, no, I don't see anything. But it's in his mind's eye, he's seeing a cartoon demon. But he doesn't believe what he's seeing is real.
Mm.
So he just lies. So then the hypnotherapist walks over to the lady and says, what do you see? And the lady goes, I see a cartoon demon. Then he walks back over to Michael and goes, and Michael heard this lady say this, right?
Right.
So he knows that she's seeing something that he's seeing in his mind's eye. So at that point, he has to admit that it's real. It's not just a fiction of his imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So he fesses up, yes, I see a cartoon demon. And then it goes on from there. Okay, so I'll go back to my case. I just wanted you to get an understanding that there are some fairly famous cases that people know about who are listening to this conversation with me and you.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will know about his case, others will not. But there, Shakuntala Modi is a psychiatrist. Her book is called Remarkable Healings, and I would highly suggest anybody who's interested in attaching spirits should read her book. It's all about demons. The whole book is a conversation between her and the demons talking from within her clients. It's one conversation after another, after another, after another. And I won't go over it in detail here because it's not necessary. But on her case, it's all about demons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fellow whose book is still sitting in my car, William Baldwin. Wrote the book, a book called, which is a how-to for removing attaching spirits for hypnotherapists, and that's worth reading. William Baldwin, there's a quote from his book I'd like to read, but I don't have it handy with me. But he mentions that there's all kinds of attaching spirits there's probably so many different types of attaching spirits as there are different types of humans.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it could be demons, it could be humans, could be earth spirits, could be, you know, and on, and you just list them out, it'll take you out, you know.
Sure.
They go on and on. Okay, so I want you to understand that attaching spirits are not all demonic. In fact, I think most of them are not demonic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, this page that we're on right now actually is handy for the rest of this conversation. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see in yellow the word doctor, the word Dr. Carl Wicklund and the Wimshurst machine.
Mm-hmm.
So Carl Wicklund was another psychiatrist like Chakuntala Modi who dealt with attaching spirits. He was the head psychiatrist at an insane asylum, and he would have his insane clients come into this room, and he would use a Wimshurst machine. Are you familiar with the Wimshurst machine?
Not at all. That's brand new to me.
So the Wimshurst machine was an invention sometime way back when, and they're very deadly devices, and you'll read things that say they're safe. They're not safe at all.
Mm.
They can't kill you. So, in fact, there's a part of the Wimshurst device that it's the part of it that collects electricity, very high voltage, low amperage electricity. If you touch that part of it after it's charged, you will die instantly.
Oh,
that's how deadly they are.
Uh-huh.
But the leads that they touch you with, that he touched his clients with, are like Tesla's Tesla coil.
Mm-hmm.
He would give like 1,000,000 volts off his Tesla coil. This is like 100,000 volts, or I don't know exactly how high these Wimshurst machines will get, but it depends on the size of the machine. I knew a guy that worked for the federal government, U.S. government, who had one that was life size. That was like the wheel was like as big as you are, and that thing would crank up some voltage.
Mm.
And so you turn this crank, and it has these strips that are metal, and the leads that within the machine touch the metal, two of them, and they go off the metal and go back to the metal, and all that electricity is piped into these two capacitor type devices that hold electricity and keeps going up and up, higher and higher voltage.
Mm.
But the leads that they touch your body with, that Dr. Carl Wicklund touched his clients with in the insane asylum, those leads were very high voltage but extremely low amperage. So the client never felt the electricity at all. But the attaching spirits inside of his clients, it felt to the attaching spirit like fire.
Oh.
So they would jump out of those people, and his wife was a psychic, so he would put her in trance first, just like the lady that worked with Michael Crichton.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd be laying there in trance. They would jump out of his client and jump into her, and then they would speak through his wife, and the relatives of the client who was insane, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would start talking to these attaching spirits through Dr. Carl Wicklund's wife, and they, ask him how long have you been here? Why did you attach to my wife or husband or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And why are you here, et cetera, et cetera.
So they would be talking to the spirits.
Yeah, and so they had help. Dr. Wicklund had all these helpers. They were disincarnate forces like angels, beings of very high power. More power than the spirit, the attaching spirits. So if you read his two books, are 30 Years Among the Dead and The Gateway of Understanding. So he's on the other end of the spectrum from Shakuntala Modi. On Shakuntala's side, it's all demons. On his side, if you read these two books, the 30 Years Among the Dead or The Gateway of Understanding, there are no attaching, the word demon does not appear in either book.
Mm.
Okay. It's all attaching humans. There's a book written by George Ritchie. Have you ever heard of George Ritchie?
Nope, I'm not familiar with him.
Okay, George Ritchie wrote a book called Return from Tomorrow. George Ritchie had an experience that was exactly like the Scrooge fiction story. It was a true story. Okay, he had this being come to him. Could have been Christ, could have been another high being of light, whatever, a very positive spirit. Came to him, and I haven't read the book, so I don't know what he describes the spirit, whether he calls it Christ or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he was taken to the past, the present, and the future by this spirit. And the one part of the book that will always stand out in my mind was he's in a bar. it's like in present time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at people drinking alcohol, right? And he says on the back top of their head, they have attaching spirits. And these attaching spirits are humans. Humans that died who were alcoholics who want to continue consuming alcohol after they're dead. So they hang out in bars and they attach to people to the back top of their head, experience the thrill of getting drunk after they're dead.
That's
but it's all humans. He does not mention demons in his story. It's all humans. So you have a whole pantheon of individuals who were use hypnotherapy and other types of there are people who do remove attaching spirits from a distance, mm-hmm. using pendulums. There's all kinds of ways that people do it. And I actually have a correspondence with a lady who mentions half a dozen to a dozen different ways of removing attaching spirits, demons or whatever. I've never even heard of most of these things. One is crystals. I used to work at this restaurant or for another company, and the restaurant was my client. And there was a girl that worked there. She had a boyfriend who got fully possessed. And before he got possessed, his girlfriend, who I knew, very cute little girl, and she had a girlfriend, and they both lived in the same apartment complex. And before he got possessed, she was talking to her friend, and she saw a demon moving around in her apartment, or either in her apartment or in her apartment complex somewhere in that area. And she saw this thing, and she started after she had that encounter, she started talking to her friend. This was before her boyfriend got possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I saw something the other day. Have you seen anything unusual around here? Without mentioning what it was, her friend described what she saw. So then after that conversation, at some point, her boyfriend got possessed by this demon, and somebody they knew she said that he was like kind of having a hard time deciding whether he wanted to be on the side of good or the side of evil. He was like, you know, right there in the middle, mm-hmm. kind of wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew this other friend that they knew, and she said that this fellow used a crystal staff. They either staked her boyfriend down. I don't know how they kept him from on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow in her apartment, they had him held down. And they put crystals and salt or whatever around him, mm-hmm. did their ceremony, and used the crystal staff her friend did, and exercised him. It didn't work, but they thought it did. They thought it worked, and they went about their business.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were in the restroom, and she was in the restroom with her boyfriend, and he tried to strangle her to death, just like Ozzy Osbourne did to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, she realized it didn't work. The exorcism didn't work. So they did it again, and it worked the second time. So that's an example of how somebody used crystals to an exorcism.
Okay, Mike. Hold on a sec, because we do need to take a break right now, but okay. I do want to get into this, and I want to, when we come back, I want to mention a few things that have come up to me as we're discussing this. This is incredibly interesting, and I really am just enthralled by what you're talking about. This is amazing. But, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, so don't go away, and we'll be right back with Mike Beaver and his amazing stories of attaching spirits. So we'll be right back. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. Thank you. right, everybody, and we are back at it here on the Paranormal Portal, and it's been an incredible discussion of just epic proportions. This is great information that I think a lot of us need to know, and by and large, most people aren't aware of all these liabilities that lie in, you know, spiritual issues that we are constantly exposed to. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have our guest today. We are joined by Mike Beaver, who is going through a whole bunch of information regarding spiritual attachments. And Mike, welcome back. And first and foremost, I want to say, you know, it's very interesting because as I was growing up, I was kind of mentored spiritually by a cousin of mine who was a very involved and progressive spiritualist. And she always warned me about bars and hospitals. She said those are two places that as people are in these spaces, especially in like bars, what she said was that when people become drinking or drunk or under the influence of alcohol, they can get these holes in their aura, the natural protective shell that we all have. And she said that that's a great place to have issues with attaching spirits or walk-ins, and that these are most often earthbound human spirits that are just waiting to experience life again. And now to hear you echo that all these years later, I just think is so powerful, because you know, when information is in our heads, it's obviously something we pay attention to, but to have it corroborated by somebody who I had never met before, and to bring that same information back, I think is incredibly powerful. So it's really cool to hear you say that again. And also, just as a quick side note, I am just absolutely thrilled to hear that there are people in the psychology and psychiatric fields and others who are taking this kind of problem seriously, because it's always been a nightmare of mine to think that, you know, how many people are sitting in asylums who, according to the modern medical model, are just insane when they're actually not. They're under the influence of some kind of dark spirit, and how tragic that is that that's not addressed.
Well, I got stuck in an insane asylum.
Oh, dear.
But it was only for three days, four nights.
Mm-hmm.
They just had me in there for observation.
Mm-hmm.
Because of something my wife said to a police officer while I was in jail.
Mm.
So anyway, they just had me in for observation. And oddly enough, I started – I had two interviews while I was – two person interviews while I was in there and one group interview. So during one of the personal interviews, I was talking to a guy, and I was talking to one of the psychiatrists there. And I said – to him, do you know the cause of insanity? And, you know, of course, he didn't. I think he understood what he's taught in school, which is chemical imbalance and aberrant training. And I was like, well, let's put the aberrant training aside for a moment. Let's go with chemical imbalance. So chemicals are liquid. Liquid is one of the four states of matter. You got solid, liquid, gas, and what's the fourth state of matter? Do you know?
Solid, liquid, gas, and I guess I don't.
Okay, well, nobody ever remembers the fourth one. It's plasma. It's charged gas.
Oh, sure.
So, anyway, I just had to explain to him that if you believe that insanity is caused by chemical imbalance, that's fine, but you next have to ask your question, where does the chemical imbalance come from?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have chemical imbalance, then you understand you have to also have energetic imbalance. Well, because all the four states of matter are energy. They're all energy. Therefore, chemical imbalance, being a liquid, you have chemical imbalance. Therefore, you have energetic imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have insanity caused by chemical imbalance, which is really energetic imbalance, the next question is, what causes energetic imbalance?
Well,
that's the attaching spirit sitting on the surface of your skin that pulls your energy out. It's hovering around you, outside of you, attached to your surface of your skin or surface of your body on your skin. And it, you can usually feel it there. You can feel a pressure, whether it's a tiny pressure or a larger pressure. It can be, if it sits on your head, you can feel like somebody pushing their hand on one little spot. You can have headaches. Okay, so if you have symptoms, let's say you have headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have the difference between a headache caused by an attaching spirit and a regular headache is that one caused by an attaching spirit is generally more localized and not as spread out. You can put your hand on that spot, the pain will go away. You take your hand off, it comes back. You put your hand on, it goes away. You take your hand off, it comes back. That's an attaching spirit. If you have a regular headache, you put your hand on that spot, your headache will not go away because it's caused internally. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a sharp back pain, focus your mind on it. If you feel an energy around that sharp pain, not just the sharp pain, but an energy around it on the surface of your skin, that's an attaching spirit. If you have a sharp back pain that stays in one spot, it never moves, that's a normal back pain. You have a slip disc, a torn muscle, whatever. It never moves. If you have a sharp back pain, it moves around your back to different spots. That's an attaching spirit. So the symptoms of attaching spirits and the symptoms of normal disease can be very similar, but they're different also. So you have to understand the difference between the two. So let's go to mankind's past for a moment. This society is if you talk to most of your, let's see how attaching spirits fit into the story of my book. Instruments of Control, How Attaching Spirits Cause War, Terrorism, Crime, Racism, Murder, Insanity, Mental Illness, Molestation, Marital Discord, Suicide, and Many Other Illnesses. And here's the important part, and are leading humanity to its fourth impending fall.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's look at that last part, fourth impending fall. So let me digress for a moment and go to your past. So you'll hear different people say, we've been on the earth four times. This is our fourth time to be here. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. There's a I don't know if it's a psychologist, says we're here, been here four times. I've heard many people say this. Mm-hmm. This is our fourth try at survival. We've died three times and we're about to go a fourth time, right? And they don't know about the future, the fourth part. But let's go with the four. So we've got our current civilization. Prior to that, by rumor, there was Atlantis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before that, by rumor, there was Lemuria, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they may or may not have interacted with each other and followed each other. All that stuff I have no connection to. But very few people know about the first time we were here. Now, that first time, it's kind of one of those things that's really hard to believe, but I'm going to go into this just so you have a really good understanding of mankind's past.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we were on the earth as a major civilization, now this may not be the first time, period, because mankind in the future develops time travel and we can literally be anywhere on the earth at any time we want. But I'm talking about a full-blown civilization.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we were here as a full-blown civilization, we were shapeshifters. Just like you're familiar with Bigelow's The Skinwalker Ranch, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So then you have the shapeshifters who are seen on the ranch, right? As the big wolf, the huge wolf, and manifesting in other ways, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so according to my understanding, we were here as shape-shifting dragons. So in China, you have the mythology of the dragon, right? So when I was getting into metaphysics in Houston, there was a fellow I came across there who does alternative healing modalities. I won't tell you exactly what he does because it's too easy to find the guy. He doesn't want to be associated with the story I'm going to tell you about the dragons.
Okay.
But he gave me this story. When I knew him and when I lived in Houston, he told me this story. when he first told it to me, I was like, no way, that's not true. That's way too outlandish to be a true story. But then he started going into the story about how he learned about it, you know, and all the details. And then it starts becoming more and more believable the deeper he goes. And in the end, he didn't want to be associated with the story. Hence the reason I won't tell you his name mm-hmm. or what he does, exactly what he did. He took a trip with a group of people, one of which I also know, to China, to a very remote northern Chinese location that's somewhere south of the Chinese Wall, but way out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he was working, this whole group of people met together, and there was like maybe 100 people, I don't know how many, but they all got together, and this one lady worked with them as a group to regress them all to past lives of regression before. I've never heard of it before or after this story, by the way. But anyway, okay. So this is what he told me. That she took them out of their body, put them back, put them out. I don't even know what this technique does for you or why it helps you, but that's what she did. And at some point, she regressed them all to past lives at the same time. Now, there was a segment of the people in the room, you know, she had them get up and walk around with their eyes closed until they felt comfortable in a spot, and then you sit down. So they ended up, what happened was a bunch of them ended up together in this one little spot in this room, and come to find out, all the people that were sitting next to each other were all around at this one time when we were here on Earth together as shape-shifting dragons. Mm-hmm. So the story was, we were dragons who could fly around the sky just like the myth, and we were also human, and we shape-shifted back and forth between these two modalities. He said that after they finished with the first day, or maybe the second day or third day of going through this experience, they were driving around in this remote area of China, and he was looking around, and he would see all these statues of dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And every single statue had a ball in the paw of the dragon. What they believe is that the ball represents, well, the ball is the aliens. So what happened was, the aliens would come down in their ships, and instead of being like a saucer like we see these days or various other shapes, their ships were balls, right?
Okay.
And so the aliens were watching us shapeshift, right, between the dragon and the human form, and they wanted us to not have that power, and I'm not sure why that is, but when the women tended to stay in human form more than dragon form. And so they would just go and capture a woman when she was in human form, and they would put her in some type of magnetic field where we couldn't shift into dragon form. And they would put us in the ship and keep us in this magnetic field and took us away. And they did examinations on us like you hear about going on today, until they figured out, you know, whatever they were researching for. I still don't know what they're researching for. And then at some point, they took away our power of shape-shifting into dragons and put us back on the Earth to where we no longer had that power.
Hmm.
So that's the story. And it's very outlandish, but this fellow who told me the story, he didn't want to be associated with the story. He didn't want fame. He didn't want money. He asked for nothing. He just gave me the gift of the story and went back to his business. He does not wish to be as connected with this. So him wanting nothing for the story kind of gives a little more credence to me. So that's human's past. So now let's go to human future. So there's a book that you may have heard of, or have you ever heard of a guy named Chet Snow?
Nope, not familiar with Chet Snow.
He's got a PhD. He's a hypnotist. And him and I forgot his partner's name. There's a lady who is his partner. Together, they, for many years, they would have hypnosis sessions with people in mass, like 100 at a time or 200 at a time or 50 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Large groups of people would come to their sessions. and they would hypnotize them as a group, and they would regress them as a group, and then they would progress them to the future.
Okay.
And so they took them all together to the future, and they each of those people landed in different time frames in the future of this planet, of planet Earth, where they were back in human form and could, you know, answer questions or figure out whatever. Okay, so I've taken a number of people to their future lives as well. Mm. So as a hypnotist. So past lives, future lives, what happens between lives, that was my area that I really like to get into, is between lives. Anyway, so he wrote a book called Mass Dreams of the Future, and I would highly suggest that you or any of your listeners read that, Mass Dreams of the Future. They did this for a very long time, like 10 to 20 years. And so they did this with probably thousands of people. And after they were finished with the session, they would have them write down the year they were in, what was going on that year in the future of Earth, and so forth and so on. And so, and then they wrote the book Mass Dreams of the Future. So if you read that book, you'll find out that hundreds, if not thousands, of humans have seen the future, and they agree that certain things are going to happen. The timeline is set. It's almost unchangeable.
Hmm.
Okay. Humans choose to die off again the fourth time. So what I feel like my purpose is to break us out of that timeline and to create a utopia. That's, I have a certain scheme or to do each step. I have some of those steps that we'll talk about in a minute that I would like to do to break out of that timeline. I don't know that we can break out of it, but I'd like to try. That's the future. So let's go to my dream of the future. So I'm going to briefly, before we get into what my dream of the future is, I'd like to very, very briefly touch on my alien encounters, because I don't want to spend too much time on those, because I go over in great detail each of my close encounters, and we can go back and go over those in the future if you want. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
My first close encounter was on October 3rd, 1980, at the northwest corner of Houston, Texas, at Clay and Gessner, when I was 18 years of age. I was living with my mother, so I had that encounter. And it's a very long encounter. It wasn't short, and I came very close to leaving the planet. I was thinking of committing suicide at the time. I used to go out at night, every single night, for like a year, and, hey, come and take me away. They never came to take me away until I was ready to actually leave. So, but I wasn't thinking about leaving with aliens. I was thinking about leaving the other way.
Right.
So that's why they came. They obviously read my mind that I was ready to go. So I won't go through that story because it takes too long to tell. But basically, that's my first encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second encounter was, a few days later. Because I thought, well, I made a mistake. I chose to stay, and I should have left. You know, I really wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like after I had the opportunity to leave. They were going to take me with them. I was like, damn, I should have gone. I was thinking, I was regretting the fact that I didn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, how can I get them to come back? And I was thinking, well, why would they want to come back? And I figured, well, maybe they want to come back to see the first launch of the space shuttle. I figured they would come back to see that, right? So I figured, well, that's 6 months from now. The first encounter was October 3rd, 1980. It was a Saturday night. The space shuttle first space shuttle launch was 6 months later, almost to the day, April 13th, 1981.
Okay.
And that was the day before my birthday. I figured, well, they'll want to come back to see that launch. And so I figured, well, how can I get on base to see that launch and meet the aliens again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to my website for a second. Click on my book again. Do you mind if I read that excerpt?
No, by all means, please do.
Okay, so this is an excerpt that anybody can read on the index of my book, which is on my website. It says, driving slowly onto Cape Canaveral before the first space shuttle launch, I began to feel the need to tell these strangers about my first the most spectacular close encounter of the second kind back on October 3rd, 1980, exactly 11 p.m. at my house off Clay and Gessner in Houston, Texas. As I finish telling them my story, the young German gentleman sitting in the passenger seat chuckles in disbelief. Because of their disbelief, I wish God would show them too. As if it were a response to my prayer, a dark craft exactly resembling the craft I just finished describing hovers directly above the curving causeway road. Its lights slowly rotate on its cloud-like edge as it hovers perfectly stationary just above the middle of the road, a good distance in front of the car. It grows larger as we slowly draw closer. Maybe that's what he saw, the German kid says. Instantly, I was given this thing was there right in front of us. I didn't see it like go into reality, but it was 1 second it's there, not there, and 1 second it is there. And it's like way out in front of the station wagon where I'm riding in.
Mm-hmm.
This curving causeway road, we drive around this road and go directly under this thing. And it's sitting about, if I'd have gotten out of the car and thrown a rock at it, I could have hit the craft with a rock.
Wow. It was really low.
It was very low. It was probably more like about 30 to 40 foot off the ground. And it was directly hovering over the middle of the road. And when we went under this thing, first of all, it looked exactly like my first encounter. It was basically a group of eight equidistant lights on the edge of a black hole with no discernible surface.
Wow.
And so the two craft, that craft and the one I saw on base, were absolutely identical. They could have been the same craft for all I know. I don't know if they were the same or they were not the same, but they looked the same.
That's really intense. That's amazing.
So when we went under the craft, well, first of all, the German kid said maybe that's what he saw,
mm-hmm.
and referring to my first encounter, which I just told them, and then the driver said, who was his employer, said yeah maybe that is what he saw, and that's those two phrases were the only. And the movement of their heads were the only part of their interaction that gave me any idea that they actually saw the craft.
Yeah, wow.
All right, so from that moment forward, they forgot about the craft. This was before we went under it.
Oh.
Before we got anywhere near it. They've already forgotten the thing is even there. They're not even thinking about this thing. No ogling, no looking. I'm sitting to the right of the children of the driver and his other, a young girl and a young boy. And then behind them, behind both the three of us, their youngest kid is sitting in the space in the back where you'd keep your luggage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the kids are all looking around, checking everything out, right? The moment this thing appeared, the instant it appeared, it was as if like in Batman where Mr. Freeze shoots Batman with the freeze ray, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's frozen. That was like what these kids were like. It's like they did not move from the moment it appeared to the moment it's gone, which took like 2 or 3 minutes. They did not move a muscle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like looking at this thing, and we're getting closer and closer to it, and we drive directly under it. One thing I noticed is there's not a single car on Cape Canaveral base that went under this thing with me that stopped. The car in front of us, we weren't the first in the line, right? There was a car mm-hmm. in front of us. They didn't stop. The cars behind us, they didn't stop. None of the cars stopped. So I don't know if everybody's mind didn't, where they didn't, nobody saw it. I can't explain it, but nobody stopped, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're directly under this thing. I put my head, the top of my head against the window, and I could look up and see outside the car, because the window was slightly, bowing out,
mm-hmm.
and I could look straight up, and I could see the edge of this thing while we're going under it, and I could see the edge of the light, so it was not smaller than the car we're in. It's like two-lane highway plus the runoff on both sides of the highway, and then if you were to double that, that would be about the size of this craft, maybe. Mm-hmm. It could have been that size or twice that size. I really don't know. But it was somewhere in that size range. Hmm. I could see the edge of it while we were directly under it, while it was 30 to 50 foot off the ground. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we get past it, and I'm looking back, and I'm watching it as we're driving away from it. And I'm noticing the kids are like totally frozen, and the adults in the front seat are still moving around like they're animated. I'm looking back at it going, wow, you know, flipping out, watching this thing. You know, I'm still in total amazement, right?
Yeah.
The kids are frozen, three kids, and the adults are animated but don't care. They don't look back, nothing. And I'm like, oh my, you know, I realize that they're no longer interested. They saw it, but now they don't see it or don't care.
Right.
And anyway, that's that story.
Yeah.
So that was my second one.
That's amazing. So, very powerful. The fact that they could appear and be recognized and yet kind of remove that memory. And you have to wonder, how many people are actually seeing these things but having their having their memories kind of modified so they don't remember it?
Well, just think about the hundreds of people, the NASA scientists that were in those other cars.
Yeah.
If I were to regress them to that moment, would they see? Would they pick it up?
Right.
And I would say yes, they probably would.
Okay.
And if I got them all in a room together, and regressed them all at the same time, and they all picked it up at the same time, and would that be kind of an event in human history?
Right. I mean, it would be, because for all of those scientists, then it would become a reality. And it probably, well, like you said, we don't know if anybody else even saw it outside of the confines of your vehicle. But the fact that you know at least two other people made reference to it, you know, is pretty powerful. But it's just kind of sad that they allegedly didn't get to remember it, you know.
Well, okay, so let me fast forward just for a moment, because we're examining their control over us.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in Peru, I had some encounters there too.
Okay.
And so they weren't that close. We were doing the ayahuasca. I did it three times, and there was a night. I was living in what they call a moloka, which is the thatched hut. Mm-hmm. And I was living in the big moloka, the big building, a big house with lots of rooms.
Mm-hmm.
But it's made out of thatched material, right? Stuff from the forest. We're out there one night behind the building, and we didn't do any ayahuasca that day, but we're back there behind this building that I was actually staying in. And one of the guys I'm with, we're all looking at the stars, and he notices the craft before I do. He picks it up, and it's almost like impossible to see because it's so small. It's way up in the sky, and it is if you took your thumb and outstretched your thumb, it would be smaller than a quarter of your thumb.
Mm, okay.
Okay, but much bigger than a star, right?
Right.
And so to the naked eye, it looked like a gray cloud, right?
Okay.
Some of the other people, there was like five or six guys and two or three women, you know, were standing there, and he sees it. He points it out to me, and I see it. And then a couple of other people gather with our little group, and the four of us or five of us guys are watching this thing. And I'm thinking, darn, I wish we had a set of binoculars. And there was a set in the Maloka, the thatched hut, that I'd seen them, but I'd forgotten they were there. And wasn't even thinking about those, because I was thinking of like a big, heavy-duty, big set of binoculars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these were like the small ones, okay. Much smaller. There was a kid that we were standing there with. He had glasses on. He could see it, but I said to him, you know, I wish we had some binoculars. And he goes, yeah, there's some binoculars in there. I said, oh, great. Can you go and get them? And so he does. He goes in the Maloka and gets the binoculars and brings them out. And he looks up himself at it with the binoculars, and he can't see it because he's got glasses on, and you can't really use binoculars with glasses. They just don't work together.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't really see it through the binoculars, though he can see with his naked eye. And so he hands the rest of us the binoculars, and we each take turns looking at it through the binoculars. So in the binoculars, it looks like an object without a defined surface and without a defined edge, sort of like a black hole like with the other one.
Mm-hmm.
It is different in the sense that it has a whole bunch of lights on it, not just 8 lights on the edge. It's got no lights on the edge, and all these lights are within the space of the craft, but there's a whole bunch of them, like 30 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't count them. I tried to count them, but I couldn't count them because they kept going on and off, one at a time.
Oh.
They would just go on and off all over the
right.
But I couldn't count the lights. Oddly enough, it was darker. If looking through the binoculars, it was actually darker than the black night sky, which that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And there was stuff about my first close encounter that details in there that to this day I still don't understand. But anyway, I'm looping back to the controlling our minds here. The boy who got the binoculars, girl who brought him to this ayahuasca session, the therapist, she's sitting, leaning up against the maloca, talking to, I think it was a lady she was talking to. I said to her, you know, you want to see this thing? There's something up here. Come check it out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She never got off her rear to get up and look at it.
Wow.
Totally. She did not disbelieve that we were seeing something. She just didn't care.
Amazing.
You get my drift.
Yeah.
That's like the guys in the station wagon with me that saw it, but then suddenly have no interest in it. Same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
No interest. It's there. I don't disbelieve you, but I don't care. So anyway, let's move forward to other things. So had a couple events that were kind of minor that may or may not have been alien related. So then I had my first close encounter on October 3rd, 1980 in Houston. Then my second one on NASA base. Then the one I just told you about, and it was about 6 or 8 miles outside of Iquitos, Peru. So Iquitos is the largest city in the Amazon rainforest, period.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's in Peru, but if you take Peru, Bolivia, Chile, Argentina, all the different countries that are in the Amazon rainforest, the biggest city in the entire rainforest in any country is Iquitos. Iquitos is the center of ayahuasca. And I'm not encouraging anybody to go do it. We may get into that depending on the direction of this conversation. So I have had a couple different encounters with beings, which I will just skim across real quick. I was out there playing Frisbee one day, and this moment I reached down to pick up the Frisbee, and I looked up, and these girls were sitting there in bikinis laying on blankets, and I'm like, where the bleep did you come from? This college is a fairly wealthy college, right? They have these fields in between these buildings that are ginormous. I mean, where you can see, you know, almost as far as your eye can see between the buildings. They're just spread out over these humongous fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really paying attention to the Frisbee while I'm chasing the Frisbee. I'm paying attention to everything around me as far as I can see. So the whole time I'm playing for an hour or whatever it was, I'm not looking at the Frisbee. I'm looking to see if somebody I'm about to run over. So there's no way on earth anybody could have gotten anywhere near me without me seeing them walk up.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. And they did it twice. And they got away twice without me seeing them walk away. They could have been walking 10 or 15 minutes, and I would still see them in the distance. That's how big this field is, right? And so they got up to where I was without me seeing them get there. They left without me seeing them go. They came back. They left. They did this twice, and I never saw them come up twice. I never saw them leave twice. So I know they were not, even though they looked totally normal, they were not human, because no way that was possible.
Yeah, that's intense. Very
okay,
intense.
So that's one of my encounters. And then another one, I was doing a metaphysical regimen. This, you know, you go in, you have these ceremonies, New Age ceremonies, things like that. Well, this one was one of, sort of an extended ceremony where you took a metaphysically charged crystal rock and tape it on your wrists or your arm somewhere on your body. And then you would take the other crystal and you would put it in the glass and you would fill the glass with water and you would drink that water as much as you could during a week. This is like a week-long ceremony.
Okay.
That you did on your own. At the end of this ceremony, it got to a point where I was, how do I put this? I felt kind of weird in my body, like my spirit was loose.
Mm-hmm.
But before my spirit got to be really loose, before that happened, I felt like I was very powerful, like I could like kick Chuck Norris's ass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I stood up off the couch. I'm skipping things. The very first thing that happened was I mostly drank Coke, and so water didn't taste that good to me. But at this point in this ceremony, the water started tasting really good. So I started drinking this water like I was at a frat party drinking booze, right? So I'm drinking the water pretty quickly, filling in the glass up, drinking it, you know, and just downing a lot of water, which I'm never like that. But anyway, that's the first thing I did. Second thing I did, I felt like I was really powerful. And so I stood up. Have you ever seen the movie Sidekicks?
Yeah, I think I have. Yeah. With Chuck Norris. Okay, well, yeah.
All right. Well, I worked on that movie.
Oh, okay.
And
cool.
In that movie, there's a scene where Chuck and the kid, they're like dressed in black and they're fighting ninjas, mm-hmm. right? In his dreams. He's dreaming this.
Yeah.
He's daydreaming, right?
Uh-huh.
And so they pick up their feet and they do a sidekick and they spin and do a sidekick and spin and do a sidekick. And they spin all the way around doing sidekicks without dropping their feet.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yep.
At head height.
Mm-hmm.
So they're fighting imaginary ninjas, right? Stood up and I did the same thing, except I left my foot stretched out. I did the sidekick, but I didn't pull my foot back like you would normally do with a sidekick. Mm-hmm. I just stuck it out head height or higher than head height and left it out there. And then I start spinning like a skater, like an ice skater.
Oh, okay.
Really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
With my foot up higher than my head, spinning faster and faster and faster like a skater.
Right.
And then I had total balance. I don't know how I was doing this because I couldn't do this in my life. Depended on me, on it. On my best day in the whole world, other than that day, I couldn't have done that.
Okay.
So I did it, and then I sat my foot down. And as I sat my foot down, that's when it felt like my spirit was about to come out of my body.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, as I set my foot down, a being, an invisible something, alien, higher life being, who knows, came into the apartment through the door that's, I guess I'm, which way am I facing? Yeah, I guess I'm facing the door. And I'm looking at this thing, and it's invisible, right? So I can't see it,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's making a sound like a computer or a robot or a cybernetic type sound, right? I to this day, I don't remember exactly what the sound was. I just know it reminded me of a computer. And I knew intuitively that this was an entity of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't see it, but I could hear it and I could sense its presence intuitively. Okay, so then it moves across the middle of the room to the opposite corner diagonally, not the same side of the room. Okay, so I spin as it's moving into that corner. I turn. I'm following it with my vision, watching, looking at the sound. You know, the sound is keeping my mind focused on it as it's moving across the room. It goes into the back corner, opposite, next to my couch. So I'm turning around, looking at it, and my spirit is like very loose in my body. So I know I'm about to go out, as in like pass out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to like fall and hit my head and kill myself. So what I do is I prepare for passing out in a controlled manner. So I go down to my knees really, really quick. This is like, it's like I'm, it's basically I'm getting extremely tired, extremely quickly without like a, it's like a slow motion passing out, mm-hmm. right? So I go down on my right, intentionally or unintentionally, to where my right, from my knee down, is touching the carpet, and I'm falling, you know, in a slow motion, facing this thing in the back corner of my apartment, and as I'm, my head is going down, my hands have already, and arms have actually touched the carpet, and my head is about to hit the carpet, and I look at, I'm looking at this thing, and I close my eyes before my head touches the carpet, facing this thing, and you know, in Star Trek, where they're like on the
bridge.
Bridge, yeah. They could be on the bridge, or they could be in another room where they're looking out a big window, and it's showing the star field, and all of a sudden they go into warp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the stars go flying past them. That's what I saw in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this thing, and it's like I go flying forward in my mind through this thing, and it's like stars are going past me, and I'm just going, moving forward through this, whatever it is, portal, right. being, and this is going on for like 5 seconds, maybe 10 seconds at most,
mm-hmm.
and then it stops, and I open my eyes, and that's the end of the story. Mm-hmm. So that was another one that I encountered.
Wow.
So you want me to summarize what I've told you so far?
Yeah.
So attaching spirits, I would say everybody's got them. Maybe a third of the people have them in the past, a third of the people have them in the present, a third of people will have them in the future. Basically, 100% of the people have them, but not all at the same time. You'll be in various situations where 100% of the people will have them, other situations where it'll only be a third or a fourth of the people have them. Remind me of that. Write this down. Remind me of those situations next time, because I need to go over the experiences I've had where I was, everybody had them, where a third or a fourth of the people around me had them, and where, you know, only one or two of them had them. I can give you about four experiences that I've gone through that are where I could tell. It was after I did the ayahuasca. I could tell who had attaching spirits and who didn't in the crowds.
Oh,
so
cool. Now, I guess probably one of the biggest takeaways I would like your advice on with this is, what is the best way a person can defend against attaching spirits or to stop attachments from starting?
Well, I'd say don't smoke pot. Don't do LSD. Don't do...
So drugs and chemicals?
Don't do illegal drugs. Don't do legal drugs.
Mm.
Don't get in a very bad accident where you get hit in the head. Don't have any surgery where you have anesthesia. Mm-hmm. Don't get extremely angry. You get my drift, right?
Right. So
it's almost impossible to not have them.
Right.
But I would say avoid getting inebriated in any way, shape, or form is the number one best way.
Yeah, and again, that's so neat that it echoes what I had heard so many years ago as well. But yeah, Mike, I just got to tell you, it's just been incredible to have you on the show and to hear your take on all of this. And a lot of it is stuff I've never heard before. And so that's what makes it incredibly interesting. And whether you just have an original take on it or if, you know, your experience has taught you in a unique manner. But I think you've brought so much incredible and encouraging stuff to the table, including the fact that spiritual effects are at least being addressed by some part of the professional community. And that to me is very encouraging, but
well, there are many, many books written by mental health professionals on removing attaching spirits. Many books. I can be found on LinkedIn. If anybody wants to check out my website, profoundstates.com is the website. They can always reach me through that, through a link on the side. If they need my number, they can get it through you. And summary. I don't know how to summarize what I've told you other than everybody's got attaching spirits, past, present, or future. If you want to know the summary, basically it's my title.
Mm-hmm.
Attaching spirits cause war, terrorism, crime, racism, murder, insanity, mental illness, molestation, marital discord, suicide, and many other illnesses, and they're leading mankind to its fourth impending fall. That is the summary of our conversation.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for being on the show, Mike. I appreciate it. And you'll definitely have to come back, because it's clear that you have episodes and episodes worth of information that you could share. And unfortunately, we just don't have all the time you need in one episode. But we'll get you back here and we'll do it again.
It sounds great.
But thank you again for being on, and have a wonderful day.
Oh, and thank you very much for having me on.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.